I am unashamed. What about you?
Well, the way I look at things, I'm not a very good student, I guess. I struggled in school, obviously. But I passed.
You said in your book that I carried you through preaching school.
Oh, you did. Well, and plus you had all these nerds like Al, you know what I mean, who know these, what I view as meaningless facts, which I'm glad someone knows
them.
Well,
that's right. They're not meaningless.
But so he bought this, he said, somewhere, but it's exactly on the same page as new. Oh, so I want it. And look.
The one I now have, Jace, by the way, is the same stories he's given. Remember Bob DeMoss?
Oh, yeah, Bob.
He makes Bibles.
But look,
we converted
tell,
him and his family.
Oh, yeah.
And he sent me this one, which was like the old one I had.
Right.
I have a leather back now, and it's held together. I get about 4 years out of a Bible before they fall apart, but this one, that's been two, so that's 2 years old. So,
well, I wanted to
I'm
tell
being careful with it.
They're getting harder and harder.
I wanted to tell Joel that in the mail, right now, they're still running the mail despite the coronavirus. There is one of my books, Good Call, personalized, and one of the Jace Robertson Pro Series duck calls tuned by me.
Which Dad says is the best duck call we ever made.
It's the best one.
I mean, better than anything.
I used all year, and I gave a little demonstration to some chick from, L.A. yesterday.
You were talking about the quarantine with the
quarantine.
How did that go? How did the L.A.
Well,
chick,
she was a young girl. I could tell that. And I figured,
you didn't
well,
call her a little girl,
I figured
did you?
Los Angeles, California. I'm thinking, okay, here we go. So I didn't know how she would take a guy who makes bird sounds. But she was intrigued by it all.
It's weird. I have to confess. How do you feel about having my name on that since you just said it was the best call ever?
As long as your last name is Robertson, I don't care. Keep it in the bloodline, Jace. Bloodline.
Now, let me tell you what happened.
None of us are making any money off of it anyway anymore.
No. I am a little bit. But
y'all signed a better deal than me.
No, I tried to quit. I went into Willie's and said, you can have this. I'm not sitting there. He's, and I was thinking, whoa, what? I'm not working. But he's like, well, but you know how, the duck calls are actually made. I'm like, well, yeah. And he said, so I want to retain you as a consultant in case we have some problem. And I said, so what does that mean? He's like, it means you go home and do whatever you do.
which we've already established on this podcast.
You don't have to.
It's not gambling. It's skill set.
Are we going to get
genetics?
Back? I want to get back on that again.
Let's leave it for another day. We done rode that horse.
So I said, look, here's what I'll do. He said, when we need you, we'll call you. So I thought, well, let's just try this. Because if he calls me every other day, then we may have to, but I'm not coming in here building duck calls. Well, here's what happened. When you know how the mold system works with their duck calls, and they go bad, they get off. I mean,
the people of the audience need to realize you were in the, I brought you on board, and your particular skill set, even down to making the reeds. At one time, you headed up the
production
of duck
years,
calls.
For years. And you taught me how everything works. Well, now, we had to train all these duck call builders when the show hit, because we literally went from making 100,000 duck calls a year to 1 million.
Yeah. Right.
So through that, we got a lot of people with skills who can build duck calls, but they don't know the aerodynamics of the details.
It's critical.
When it gets into modes and all. So Willie, and look, he was like, and we want to, market your face since we, became famous on the show or whatever. So I was like, well, this might be a pretty good deal for me. If I get paid for not showing up and just being a consultant, this may be, but I wasn't sure. It's not that I don't trust him, but I was like, is he trying to hustle me?
You know what gets me about Si? He's some kind of consultant for a pipeline company. Jace is a consultant. You really made him a consultant. But nobody has ever came to me. Not one person said, we want to pay you money just to consult, just a little consultation. I'm like, consultation. Jace, he's got it. Si has it. I'm sitting down here thinking about, if you pay me, I'll consult people.
Look, you got weeded out.
They say, no, you're out. I'm like, okay.
Well, don't feel bad, Dad. I'm out, too.
I don't feel bad. I'm just saying.
My skill set.
So I'm going to tell you all the story.
You would think if I trained him and Willie's going to pay him to consult, I'm like, well, where's my consulting fee? Zero.
Because he can't. Because he knows he can't.
He can't manipulate.
He can't manipulate you. Yeah.
See, right. He thinks he's manipulating me, but look, here's what happened. So I go about 3 months. I don't get a phone call. No consultation. And I'm getting a check. I'm like, boy, this is.
And you're not worried. You're not checking on it because you got a sweet.
As long as the money is
that's
coming.
That's a good deal.
Oh, I know.
So he's like an Airedale dog. He's as dumb as he looks.
I'm out there playing golf, you know, and somebody's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm working. Willie's paying me out here for a consultation. I'm thinking.
Consultation.
he's consulting his mind.
So look, so then Willie calls me. He's like, we got a problem. I'm like, oh, here we go. So they had this duck call that went off the rails. And so here I'm being completely honest. Willie's not going to listen to this anyway. And so I can't figure out what's wrong with the thing. You know, the motor went bad, and that we got all these parts. I'm like, what are we going to do? So I start tinkering. We start changing the mold setup, and I don't want to get into all the details because people won't know what I'm talking about. So I finally come
Everybody
up.
Everybody needs to realize, just stop right there, that in the duck call world, we put a lifetime of work into duplicating the sounds of multiple species of ducks.
Correct.
And to us, it's like playing piano by ear. We everything is, you say, well, how would you know when you've got a duck call that actually sounds exactly like a duck? Mm-hmm. Well, your years of experience of listening to them, you'll know when you're on their right wavelength. So it is more to it than meets the eye. So just continue your story. This duck call is not sounding like, it's not functioning properly to sound exact. It's like a piano note.
Yeah.
That note is not the right note.
What's fascinating is 40 years ago, we watched you. We were kids. I mean, we watched you figure that out. I mean, you had recordings of ducks. I remember some of that early stuff you did.
I was a man of the forest, of the swamp. You say, so when you heard a duck, the way they sounded when they flew by, you registered that, and it was like, so
how do I get that whistle?
I have to build a device that mimics that precisely.
It was amazing.
So I send it off. You know, you have to work kind of intimately with the mole man. I send it off with the new plan. Well, it comes back. It's better than what I sent, which was, how many times has that happened in our not very often.
Rare.
So I'm
rare.
Like, awesome. Made me look like a genius. So I'm like, that. It was so good. I was like, I'd put my name on that. And so they did. I mean, that's how it happened.
And what they said to me was, Stone is the one that married your daughter.
Correct.
Stone, that's how he got him. But now he heads up. Jace has trained him enough where he's doing it. But I will have to admit, Jace, out of all the people we could have had, Stone is the best.
Oh,
he brought the one, and I looked down. I blew the call first, and I said, well, he said, this is our latest call when it came down to Jace's, what they call it, Jace, it's a pro series.
Yeah,
Jace's pro series. So I said, oh, yeah, I bet this is going to be good. So the old guy that started the whole operation, I cranked down on it. I blew it, and I said, Stone, this is the best one we've ever come up with. Well, who come up with? Then he brought Jace in and said, no, Jace, he got out there.
It was just, you know what? I got lucky.
But I used that all winter this year. That's the only one I used. Mm-hmm. Same reed. Every once in a while, I get a little snuff in the reed or something. You have to clean it out a little bit.
Well,
but overall, it held up better.
Yeah.
The sound was precise. I mean, it was just
exactly. Well, I got good news for you. So we sold them for, a year or so? Well, then that we had another problem.
So you're sending your man that gave you the Bible a autographed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he'll get one of those. And it's the new and improved. Because look, we had some more problems a year later, but actually went through the same system. And now it's better than it was the first time.
It just keeps getting better.
Oh, it just keeps getting better. So I'm like, when?
Till Jace is still getting paid. So obviously, thank you for what was Joel?
Joel,
thank you, Joel, for doing that. And some of the others have you sent me notes because they felt bad for Jace because you saw the condition. I mean, whole sections of his Bible are coming out, and I was like, Jace, at some point, you know, you're just going to try to run over to 1 Peter, and it ain't going to be there.
Yeah, it wasn't there. The last time I spoke, because it had gotten backwards, because
you know what's amazing? Just so the people will know, how in the world, because I said I get 4 years out of a Bible before it wears out. Well, I'm looking at paper that comes from pine trees. This is where this paper came from. Can you imagine? For 5,000-year-old writings, going all the way back to creation, Moses, you know, 3,000 B.C., whatever. And you say, how in the world did they get that written down on animal skins or papyrus?
Do you remember when we went to...
How did it get here? Our Bibles, we can't keep them together.
Remember we went to Hobby Lobby, and they took us back there to those Bible antiquities? We saw, what was it, 1,800 years was the oldest one.
Yeah.
They had some scrolls. Yeah. 1,800 years old. And, of course, they're Hebrews, so, you know, they're written backwards from our perspective. Yeah. It was amazing, wasn't it?
It was amazing.
They were like in these cases, you know.
And it was still together.
You know what's weird to me, though, is, I don't know.
Just to get the writings to us, we're looking at a high-technology world with paper and all.
Yeah.
But you say, well, how many Bibles do you have to run through? They wear out. Yeah. I mean, the pages fall out. They get so they're torn.
Well, unfortunately for most Christians, the Bible, they don't wear out, which is a problem.
But here's my weird thought for the day. I can't find it within me to throw it away once I've worn it.
I know.
Out.
I got to.
I can't throw them away.
I got to stack.
So what is the deal?
Are given as gifts. Different ones called. They say that old Bible you had. Somebody said he would love to have one of your Bibles, and so. You know, once you start underlining this and that and the other, and you got some passages, you know,
I don't think it would be wrong.
It's not wrong.
But people would, I feel weird about it. I've never thrown a Bible away. I have a whole
Everyone I've ever owned is in a storage building.
Because they print them, they're trying to make money.
It's something you can't throw away.
Do you realize that the Bible has been the best-selling book for the history of books being sold every year?
Oh yeah,
the Bible's by far.
I saw that somewhere.
Yeah, it's the bestseller every year since they've been keeping up with books.
You remember that?
Rightfully so.
You
remember that Denzel Washington movie?
Oh yeah, Prophet of
Moses.
Eli.
Oh yeah,
Book of Eli.
Book of Eli. That's a good. It's rated R, but everybody's in their houses now with nothing to do, watch that. You know.
Oh, it's amazing.
Did
you see
it? Well, I don't want to give it away. But you need to watch that. It's good.
Yeah, but don't watch it with your kids because it's radar. So what I was thinking was there's a lot of people have been impacted, and that's why we appreciate the gifts and stuff. Guy Kenny.
I actually let my kids watch that movie.
Really?
I did.
Was it why was it radar? Just violence?
I think it's cussing and stuff. I mean, I told them, I said, you're going to hear some four-letter words in here that are not right, and if I hear you say them, I'll whip your butt.
Yep.
But the overall theme of this movie is worth you watching. You know, so I made them watch Saving Private Ryan. People say, this is the dumbest thing ever. But I'm like, I want you to know how this country got here.
And I felt the same way.
It was violent. I probably shouldn't have done it. But I said, boys, this is going to be your first rated R movie, and I want you to watch it.
I had a lady at church years ago when The Passion came out, and she was like, Passion of the Christ. She was like, well, we can't. You know, I'm getting the whole church. We rented a whole theater for the church. I'm like, we got to go see this, and I want us to see it together. And I'd already seen it. You know, it was just so powerfully moving.
Everyone needs to see
it. Yeah, and so she's arguing with me. She says, well, we can't see that. And I was like.
Was it rated R?
Rated R, yeah. She said, because it's rated R. And I was like.
Let me just say something. The Bible's rated R.
Yeah, all throughout.
The Old Testament. Look, you start skimming through there. Have you read the Song of Solomon lately?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a woman's, you know, anatomy and graphic and, you know, read some Leviticus on some of their laws.
Yeah.
Look, having said that, I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. I know I've hijacked your thought.
No, you keep
but
going.
Look, everybody's
hang on. We got to take a break.
Oh, dude.
We have talked right through the break. Hang on. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. So we're seeing a lot of, obviously, you know, we got this pandemic going on. We see a lot of, you know, good things happening, people rallying, helping people. I mean, I've seen a lot of real positives, but always there's going to be negatives.
Well, people are dying.
And yeah. then also people are stealing. You know, I saw some footage. They go in the drugstore and look, just raking it off the shelves in a bag and just walk out like they own the place. Mm-hmm. And everybody's just standing around. So things like this bring out the best and worst, unfortunately, in everybody. But there's something that I never realized before until I heard about it recently about people stealing your home title, literally the title to your home, online.
Yeah.
They hack in these systems at the bank and mortgage companies and whatever.
This would fall into the class of inventing ways of doing evil, Romans 1.
That's exactly right. So there's a woman named Deborah. I mean, literally, she lost her house. They went in, they took it, they stole a bunch of money. Then she got evicted out of her own home. So, you know, it's what bad people will do. So we got a company, Home Title Lock, which is basically there to protect you because you don't always get it from homeowners insurance and all these other things in the bank. So this group is going to protect your home. You go to their website, hometitlelock.com, and if you enter Phil, you get 1 month of free protection. So you can go in there, you register, you make sure you still own your own home, which is important. hometitlelock.com. If you use Phil, you get 1 month for free. So check it out. Protect your home.
Well, you said the Bible is R-rated, rightfully so, but I wonder if there's any violence in the Bible. So the Lord sent a plague on Israel, 2 Samuel chapter 24, verse 15. So the Lord sent a plague on Israel from that morning until the end of the time designated, and he said it's going to last about 3 weeks, and 70,000 of the people from Dan to Beersheba died. You're like, what? You mean it's a pestilence, a plague, end time judgment on his own people? That's what it says. So, so all I say is, somebody said, "Well, where in the world has come? You can't blame God." I'm like, well, he's done it before.
In some cases,
I just read your text. Mm-hmm. One of many.
I've told people that many times, though. With, you know, if you have a relationship with God, you understand Jesus. You know, we talk more about the cross probably in the religious world, which is fine because that's the death for our sins. But you can't leave out the resurrection. If we're in good graces with God, who has the ability to raise dead people from the ground, death is just not viewed as a problem with him. So what I was going to tell you, since we're spending so much time
being
quarantined.
While you're there, Jay.
Oh, I wasn't really anywhere.
Yeah, but mentioning people's zero in on the cross and say nothing about the resurrection. The Apostle Paul, this is 1 Corinthians about 15, about 12.
I love it. Come on.
If I fought wild beasts in Ephesus for merely human reasons, what have I gained? If the dead are not raised, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Don't be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. The Apostle Paul said, if there's no resurrection, I'm to get here to y'all. I'm fighting wild beasts. I don't know exactly what he meant, but evidently he had a little ruckus.
A melee with wild beasts.
With wild beasts.
Where's
he says, look.
Where's that at?
1 Corinthians 15.
Where?
About verse 31. Yeah. But so if you read that, Al, you say, you know, what he's just saying is, look, if there's no resurrection, the problem is in America right now is our people are eating, drinking, being merry because tomorrow we die. Hmm. They don't believe in the resurrection.
Yeah. I wonder if they put him in like a gladiator thing with the wild beast or whatever. You know,
I don't know.
That's interesting. It may have been. I hadn't really noticed that before. But what I was going to say is, there's a new show out, highly controversial. It's on Netflix, called The Messiah.
I saw the ads for it like before the first season came.
I watched it. Look, because we've worked with Hollywood for years, and as critical as I am of Hollywood overall, I mean, most of the time I'm you know, just horrible.
And by the way, R-rated movies typically are bad, which is why we sat. But, you know, you just can't throw your brains away and say every R-rated movie.
But I thought, you know what, I'm going to watch this because I want to know what they're projecting to the world about the Messiah. You know what? I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was good because, now it's rated R. I'm just going ahead and clarifying that. If you can't, you know, spit out the bones while you're eating the fish, don't watch it.
If you filmed what the Bible says when it gets into sinful behavior and immorality and everything else,
true.
If you just filmed what is said, oh, it would be triple X.
Well, it would.
Mel Gibson did it. He did it with what happened to Jesus. And trust me, it's very R-rated. And
this is a little different just because, like you read the Bible, you're not going to see an F-bomb or whatever. But you watch The Messiah, you're going to hear a few. But it's not, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that bad. It's not like a crime, you know, gangster, whatever. You know, it's not every other word. But here's what I'm saying. All they did was ask the question, and I'm not going to ruin the show for you. It's like 10 episodes. They asked the question, is Jesus, if you had a modern, if Jesus came like today, that's basically kind of the gist of it. Who do you say Jesus is? And so they walk that line. They basically portray, is he just an imposter or is he actually the Son of God? And so, you know what?
That was the argument then and now.
That's why it works for me, the show, because they don't, you know, if they'd have had Jesus doing something, anything wrong or sinful, I'm out on that. But
it was like that. Somebody did a movie years ago called The Last Temptation of Christ. Some big name, maybe Scorsese, somebody. And in it, Jesus has an affair with this, you know.
I've never seen that. I mean, to me, I heard about that. I never even watched it. Now, here's what I think offended religious people is, of course, I'm thinking, what kind of religious zealot are you anyway if you watched it? You know, if you were like saying, here's why I'm offended. Well, I mean, I thought you didn't watch rated R shows. But anyway, here's why they got so offended.
Do they even rate them, though, on Netflix? Are they even rated?
I'm just telling you, it's rated
R. I know because you saw it, but I'm saying,
I think it's mature.
I don't even know.
I think it says mature.
Oh, okay.
It's not, there's not, I hate to say what
there's
not.
Yeah, you're going
to
say that.
Look, if there's anything in there that was really bad, I fast forwarded it because I don't remember anything. But here's why people got offended in the religious world. Because it makes the religious people look terrible. But guess what? A lot of what they were portraying is actually true about religious people. Like, one of their concepts was tying everything about their religion to the actual building. Like, you go to the building. It's like, let me give you an example. The pastor at the local church, his wife, well, you know, she had some issues. And so did the pastor, by the way. But she dropped a couple F-bombs, you know. And I'm sure people are like, well, now I can't believe they're portraying a pastor's wife. Well, I got news for you. In real life, there are pastor's wives who have dropped F-bombs. It's happened.
It's probably, yeah, it happens a lot. Probably.
Well, I'm just saying, it's like, but you see something like that and say, well, that would never happen. Oh, we're flawed human beings. That, you know, did they have to show it? Maybe not. But that's real life. Some people, you know, we have moments of weakness or whatever. And so I'm saying that kind of stuff, I think, is what people found offensive. But overall, I think they pretty much got it right. You know, now a lot of what happened in there from a theological standpoint, which, you know, we can devote a whole podcast to this. What happened is when people thought this may be the Messiah, the religious world, well, they, since they have a different view, like of Revelation, or, you know, here's the afterlife where these wars are going to happen. I don't know what view we can sum up that view. There's a word like this long to sum that up. But, well, they show all them, but that would happen in our life. Mm-hmm. If people thought that Jesus was actually here, people who have a different view of what's going to happen in the afterlife, they're coming.
Yeah.
So all these religious people, they're like, well, it's time to go to war. You see what I mean? Yeah. So they portray that, but that's the truth. There are people who believe that.
The most religious people on the...
Hold on. Let's take a break and then come back with that.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
Here's a group of individuals, the most religious group on the face of the earth at the time Jesus was on the earth. He said to them, "You brood of vipers, how can you who are evil say anything good? For out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks." Mm-hmm. He's talking about the difference between good men and this group. Well, these were the pillars of mm-hmm. the religious world at the time.
That's right.
For Jesus to call them a brood of snakes, that's pretty blunt. Yeah. I usually don't call anybody, even if they're out there, especially people in the religious world, I usually don't use the terminology, "you bunch of snakes."
All right. Well, it says even in 2 Corinthians that the devil himself masquerades as an angel of light.
Well, the religious people were the bad guys of the Gospels.
Yeah.
I mean, Pharisees.
That's why many people in America have an aversion to what they call organized religion, because this was the epitome of organization.
Yeah,
organized right. religion.
Right. Well, look, full disclaimer, there's two or three episodes of the series at the end that was very difficult for me to watch because they were leaning toward imposter, you know, and so it's like you're taking jab because as a lover of Jesus, well, I believe in everything he is and does. So when they tried to make him look like an imposter, which I realized, well, that's Hollywood doing it because they want to bounce off both where you're not sure which one it is, which is in reality.
He was labeled with that throughout his ministry, yeah. Imposter.
But at the end, you know what? They were, I thought, fair if you can make it to the end. And you're not sure. That's what kind of made the show work is – you know, they worked the plot line of, is he really the Son of God? Well, here's all this evidence. Well, here's what I want to say about the show from a biblical, theological viewpoint. You got to remember that all the people in Jesus' day, because if you put yourself in that day and you say, what would I think? Because that movie or the TV series really kind of makes you think that way. You're like, what would I think if I saw a miracle? Would my first instinct be, no, that had to be a trick? Okay. Or did he do it? Well, think about what Jesus did. You got four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all the miracles he did. He fed the 5,000. He healed people. He walked on the water. And well, after all that happened, you get to the book of Acts, chapter 1, and it says the believers were together in one place. And I'm thinking the number would have been at least 100,000 just from people who had seen the miracles.
Yeah.
And it's 120. What? And that's why I like the show, because even if you saw a miracle, in your mind, you have to do something with that. You got to think, well, wait a minute here. You know, just think if you actually saw a miracle in real life, your mind would have a hard time believing it. Look, even if you saw it.
And when it got right down to the crucifixion, they've been running with him 3 years, a group of individuals who had witnessed the miracles. Jace,
mm-hmm.
They all hit the road. It wasn't enough to keep them there.
And look, even when I read, I think, a couple podcasts ago in Luke 24, when he showed himself the scars, and it says, then they believe, or right before that, it says, they still didn't believe because of joy and amazement.
Yeah, but some doubted. I mean,
yeah, but then it says they still didn't believe because of joy and amazement. It was like, it's too good to be true.
I'm happy. I'm amazed, but
I just don't believe it. Because think about it. Have you ever seen anything come back to life?
Nope.
Nope.
You ever seen anybody really walk on the water?
Nope.
Now, there's been people who've walked on the water before as a trick. You know, they put it out there. They're like, because I don't want to give the show away, but there's moments in there. Just think if you had a modern-day Jesus doing the exact same thing. Well, now in our TV world, everything he was doing was going viral. Because they're like, but you see other things that go viral that seem to be superhuman or miraculous, and you're thinking, yeah. I mean, think about all the UFOs. They got all these pictures. You know, you've seen the same one. I mean, you got Bigfoot out there. I mean, we took a picture of Martin on a deer cam, and guess what? I thought it was Bigfoot. When I first saw it, I thought, you have found Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's Martin. He works
it's
for
Burley.
What's that commercial say? Totally. What's that commercial say when an old girl was asking about it? You know, what do you think about Bigfoot? And she, he said, Bigfoot? He looked down at his feet when they were big. He said, my name's Dale.
Yeah. That's the way I feel about Burley. Sorry, Martin. I called Martin. Well, Martin has Bigfoot tendencies.
Yeah, he's got a big head. And
Neanderthal big, look.
Yeah. I love how you label people, Phil. I mean, the first time he met Martin, what did you call it?
Horse head.
Yeah.
I thought... I mean, the guy's nervous about meeting Phil. He's a new employee. Willie's like, here's, you know, he's going to start working for us. And
henceforth, you shall be known as Horsehead.
Phil said, you got a head like a horse. So then he was named Horsehead for about 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to be around here, you better have thick skin.
That old Burley.
Old Burl. Yeah.
He's so where were we, Al?
I don't know where we were. I took a detour.
We weren't anywhere. Two or three times I tried to start us, and we got off to...
That
was really good.
Yeah,
was,
let's introduce what we're going to do from the book of John.
Yeah, well, let me tell you this short story, and then that'll get us to John 3, because John 3 is where we're going to be.
For a while, because you know what the number one... Which this is weird. The number one email that we're getting, because you're sending them to me. They're sending them to Al. He sends them to me. And every once in a while,
I send some to you.
You get a new Bible. I'm like, okay, this is a good one. But
I'm only sending you the good one.
For some reason, people are asking about baptism.
A lot of questions.
So much. It's the number one issue that people ask about, and so we figure, based on that, we would spend a couple podcasts on it because we're in John 3.
I knew we were going to get to John 3, which really explains a lot about baptism, and so. So a lot of you have been sending questions about baptism. But I was going to mention a guy named Kenny that came through a few weeks back. And a great guy, a seeker. You know, so he was searching for that relationship with God. The podcast has really spoken to him. And he's a poker player, Jace.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And he's,
let's not get back into that. I don't have time to.
So, but he told Dad, I think he told Dad, or maybe it was Si, because Si made him too. He was like, I'm a poker player. And Si was like, me too. And
Si is a gambler.
Yeah.
Who plays poker.
So you keep going there. So he said, here's the thing. I think he told this to Dad. He was like, I'm only three quarters in. I'm ready to go all in. And he made the motion of the chips going in. And he meant spiritually. And so he did. And Dad baptized him. And it was really – the reason I bring it up is you know, I know Kenny listens.
And the river right back behind.
Yeah, yeah.
And oh, really? That
right behind
that's dedicated. I like it when people get baptized in the winter in the river.
Yep.
Because you know what? That's dedication.
That's right.
Because they're fixed to freeze their butt off.
Hang on. Take a quick break, and I'll finish the story. So, yeah, so Kenny, you would have loved this baptism because Dad was being all compassionate because Kenny was like, I'm ready to go. And Dad was like, here, put these waders on. It won't be quite so cold on you. So, but when you get baptized in waders, something happened that I've never seen before. I've never seen
Wait a minute now.
Yeah, he had waders on and Dad had waders on.
Well, that wasn't a good idea.
Dad was trying to be compassionate. He didn't want to get cold.
You're going
to
fill your waders up.
Well, he tied.
Nope. Jess, you're way behind the curve.
Did he get wet?
No, listen. You strap the chest on his waders. You strap that tight right here. You strap it tight. Your baptism is you die to sin and you're buried. So you're going under the water. You die to sin. Therefore, you're buried with Christ.
Romans 6.
Your faith is saving you. Coming together. So look. So when he goes down, it's 1001, and he comes back up. The water does not have time other than just a little seepage.
And that's true.
But if you're going to baptize people in a wilderness-type area in the wintertime, I just wanted
it
to make it easier for him as far as here's, the shock of the cold water. But here's, I made it easy for
him. I'm going to disagree. Let him just get he the was full ready. Effect.
He said, I need some cold, was Kenny's word. But look, here's what happened. So this was funny. You'll appreciate this. Dad probably didn't even realize it happened. So when Dad takes him under, what happened was he had that was tied around his chest. Mm-hmm. Well, there's air in there.
Yeah.
So when he took him back, his boots popped up out of the water. Like that big air rush mm-hmm. was inside there. Well, he was like a cork. Mm-hmm. He just went whoop. And he like when you took him down, his feet went straight up out of the water. I've never seen that happen before because most people, their legs stay mm-hmm. under the water. And when he came up, because it's deep down there at that flooded boat dock.
Yeah.
He came up, the look on his face, because like I think he thought he was fixing to take off because it had to have felt like this wind rush.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Kenny is a new brother, fired up about it. I mean, he drove home that and he said,
and tell what he did. I got the check right here.
So yeah, so that's why I'm telling the story. So he owns a restaurant chain, and of course coronavirus has hit him super hard. So I sent him a note yesterday. Because he sent me a letter when I got back home from my last trip. He sent a letter just thanking us for, you know, being a guide for him and for you baptizing him. And so in your name and my name and Lisa's, because we had him over for dinner, mm-hmm. he sent a check to Miamu. Yeah.
$5,000
for and yeah. it, just as a, you know, thank you for, he said, you know, I'm all in. So it was interesting. So I sent him a note and I said, well, hey, how are you faring, you know, with this coronavirus? You got a restaurant chain, you know, not good. I mean,
yeah,
restaurants,
I mean, that's terrible for.
So he said, here's what he said. He sent me a note and I wanted to mention it because I thought it was the right approach in our mindset. And this is a brand new Christian. And he said, you know, I've lost 50% of my business. I mean, these franchises, you know, he said, I'm sending them notes and I know you probably having a hard time paying your fees. Pay me what you can pay me. Pay your employees, try to do the right thing, you know, if you're getting shut down. He said, but you know what? As a Christian now, as somebody that's all in for Christ, he said, I'm not even worried about it. He's like, the Almighty's going to take care of it and take care yeah. of me. And I thought, you know, so I thought about him coming to Christ right before this pandemic hits. He's got a huge restaurant chain. Obviously, he's got a good heart. He, you know, donated to Miamu. But I thought, man, for him, it was the timing could not have been more yeah. perfect to now understand the Christian side of things where you're like, you know what? Even if we got a business, even if we're struggling, I mean, we have a struggling business. Mom and I have a bakery together, and we had to shut it down for a while. But we're not like just wringing our hands.
Lately, he comes to mind, when one walks with God, one is never alone.
Right.
Exactly. He gets that.
Exactly.
That's what church leaderships across the country, because you know me, Al knows this is a sore subject with me. I cannot stand like these churches that do a series on giving, you know, because they look at the number. I know where this is coming from. I'm like, they went in there and look, well, contributions are down. Well, let's do a series on giving. I'm like, if you want people to give, you do the same thing you do with anything else in life. You get them hooked on Jesus. You know, when somebody surrenders or like he said, I'm all in for Jesus, and then at the worst time to be a restaurant owner during the coronavirus where they literally shut you down.
Yeah, can't go in there.
Yeah, the stocks of the restaurant stocks, trust me,
I was going to ask you
that
the other day.
South. Yeah, you know, I only have a couple, but of course – they'll
so what
be
point
back.
Do you want to buy them back? See, that was nice. Because at some point, they're going to come back.
Oh, they're coming
back.
You're
just kind of timing it out.
You got to remember, if you can't look at the stock market as real money, even though it is, because it's almost like a game like that. Like, I think one of the best, let me give you, you know, these people, you know, on TV, they never give stocks, actual stocks, because they feel like, that you know, what if they're wrong, too? But I'll give you one. Texas Roadhouse, it's an up and coming stock. You know, they figured out how to make money. Well, that thing, I was way up in it, and then the coronavirus hit. So guess what? Now I'm way down. So I didn't sell it because it went down so fast that I couldn't sell. I mean, I guess I could have tried it, but and so guess what? When it went down for, what, 3 or 4 days? You know, when it got really low, I just started buying some more. Well, since then, it's already rebound. I'm almost back to even just because when you buy all the way down, well, now you've cut your cost in half. Well, I thought it was a good model Before that, now it's cheaper. So it'll come back. Look, there's one thing about humans that I know. They got to eat.
That's right.
And there's so many yuppies in this world that their people are not, you know, cooking for themselves. They're sitting there staring at the ceiling, wondering when they can go back to Texas Roadhouse.
And look, we want to encourage you guys to get takeout and help these guys because they're, I mean, I've been doing it just, I mean, I got plenty of food to cook, but I've been doing it just so I can help these restaurants because, I mean,
yeah.
You know, stay in business. So if you're in the Carolina area, Highway 55 is a burger joint. That's Kenny's Places. So give them some business. I'm sure they'd appreciate it. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and get into John 3.
Well, let's introduce John 3.
Yeah, so basically that's all we have time to do. We've been, you know, it's been a little while since we were in John, but we're right after the, you know, Jesus. We had the wedding, and we talked about the changing the water into wine. Mm-hmm. Then Jesus kind of had what I call the temple tantrum, where he went in and flipped the tables and turned everything over.
Oh, and you preached that.
Yeah, that's on our website, by the way.
And it was, I thought it was excellent. I thought one point you made that was really good, and we're talking about giving money and despite difficult times and stuff like that. When you made the point about where it says in 2:24, but Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all men, because he knew, you know, that what was in their heart.
Right.
He did not need man's testimony about man, for he knew what was in a man. But you made a point. I'll let you make the point about how Jesus trusts us because he knows us. Well, I thought it was a really good point.
Yeah, and I talked about how I went back and used Job as an example, and there are a lot of other people in the Bible that Abraham was one who was called a friend of God. So, you know, it's the idea that we only think of it as a one-way relationship, that God is so great and we're so bad, but God doesn't look at us that way. I mean, he mm-hmm. trusts us. He calls us his friend, like Abraham or Job.
Despite
or
our flaws.
Despite our flaws.
You know, he knows that. But I thought that was a really good point because you think, here I am in the coronavirus. You know, we talked about Kenny, and he owns restaurants, but he comes to the Lord. He knows he's going to live forever. It's giving him purpose now. His mission now is not to make money. It is to make disciples, just like he is, and yep. use what he has to help that. And then he's, by no admonishment from us, on his own, says, you know what? The last thing the evil one would expect me to do right now with me, you know, struggling him in the restaurant business is to give money to some people who need it. Well, you think about these families that
his rate of income nosedived, but he was still generous.
He's generous.
He gets
well,
it.
He's given. Look, think about the families who have kids with cleft lip and palate during this time, who may be out of a job, who they're already financially strapped.
Jace, you were in the boat most of the time once you became about 12, 15 years old, and you too, Al, y'all rode around with me. I'm raising the nets. When I left, y'all would go down.
Try 8 or 10.
Yeah, y'all would go down there, and you would run up and say, y'all got to run the nets. I got a trip going somewhere.
Yep.
So Jace would run them, you know. But from there, just moving forward, you stay faithful to the Lord. You say, out of that kind of out there on cold, rainy days, I mean, it was rough.
And you
look back at it, you said they just stayed the course, kept their faith in God, and they looked up one day. And
well, here's the way I tell it when I'm speaking to an audience, because you know, I'm visual. So when I give my speech, different from y'all, I do it in picture. I have pictures. And on the screen, and no notes, just pictures, and I go by the pictures. And so I show a picture of our family in 2017. It was the last night we filmed Duck Dynasty. And it's a stately picture. You've probably seen it before. It's in Willie's living room, and all of our families are there, and everybody looked. You know, it was the end of an era. You know, it was the last time we were going to film together. And I show that picture. Well, you know, I'm speaking to audiences that love our show and love the family. And so I said, what about this family? Oh, we love that family. And everybody claps. And I was like, but you know what? Way back before this picture, you know, there were struggles. And I talk about some of your past, some of my past, some issues we had. And then I also talk about that 40 years that we spent down here doing just what you described. And I said, we were literally living on manna. I mean, God would send enough fish into nets for us to eat. and pay the bills. That's manna. I mean, that's what he did with the children of Israel.
Yep.
So I was like, and you know why I think he did it? Because he, and because he's outside time, he knew that family in 2017. He knew we were going to be people going to love us and people were going to, you know, want to talk to us and be like us and blah, blah, blah. But he didn't want us to think it was us. So he put us through a 40-year humility training program.
No doubt about
right
it.
Right out here on the Washita River. So when the day came, when we'd be, you know, people think we're a big deal, we'd say, no, it's not really us. It's him.
Yep.
He did
it.
Yeah,
we're river rats.
We're river rats.
But we have the Holy Spirit of God.
That's right.
Which makes us indestructible and have something to say.
Exactly. So we didn't really introduce Nicodemus, and we're out of time. But
well, I think they should read it.
Yeah, I think so. Read John 3. Mm-hmm. Read it carefully. And in our next podcast, we're going to dive into this. Is a great story, a lot of really good stuff, and we're going to answer a lot of baptism questions because they're right here.
Oh, I think John 3 should be in the top 5 chapters of the Bible.
Oh, you are correct.
John chapter 3. Think about what's the most famous
John 3,
verse?
16. You see it everywhere.
Okay.
There you go, right in the middle.
There's your teaser.
So check it out next time on Unashamed.
So we're so glad you guys were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or Facebook, and be sure and rate us on iTunes so that other people can know about the podcast.